We're learning the first chapter in Perkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, Mishnah Tess. The Mishnah tells us, Shimon ben Shattach Omer, the words of Shimon ben Shattach, we'll discuss in a moment, the significance of this individual, the role that he played in the Jewish world in his lifetime. As we've described in the past, it's necessary to understand the history of the person who is the author of the Mishnah. Because the person who wrote the Mishnah, it's simple, Perkei Avos, the concept is just ethics. As we mentioned, in reality, all you would need to do is have one author, like we find in many modern-day philosophers. You go to a Barnes & Noble, you can easily pull up a book with all different types of ethics, teaches you proper ethical codes. However, Perkei Avos, it's not just that it's teaching us something specific, but the words that are quoted by the author of the particular Mishnah, that person lived by those words. So if we understand, after we see the Mishnah, a little bit of the individual, we can understand afterwards the reason why he chose the words that he did, Ladoros, for all future generations to be remembered. So the Mishnah again, Mishnah tests, Shimon ben Shattach Omer, he says, Havi marbe lachkor es edim. Person should interrogate the witnesses extensively. Vehavi zahir bedvarecha, be cautious with your words, Shemim mitocham yilmedu l'shaker, because possibly, otherwise, they'll learn how to lie. Now, on the surface, this Mishnah is referring to the judicial system, that a judge has to be very cautious with the words that he says, otherwise people will learn the possibility of eventually lying. Now, certainly when we hear this, we have to ask ourselves, why do I need to know this? What's the significance of this? How does this affect my life? I'm not a judge. I'll never be a federal judge. So why do I need to learn this Mishnah? What's so important? How does it affect me? But before we understand that, we have to have a little bit of a backdrop of who Shimon ben Shattach was. Now, because in the previous Mishnah, Mishnah Ches, it said Yehuda ben Taboy and Shimon ben Shattach, and they're coupled together, those are considered to be pairs, they're zugot. And generally speaking, the person who is mentioned first is the Nasi, is the president, the leader. And the second person is the Av Bestin of that particular generation, which would stand to reason that Shimon ben Shattach, therefore, should have been the Av Bestin. However, there's a discussion whether or not that's in fact the case. Perhaps Shimon ben Shattach was the Nasi. So there are those that actually say that at one point he was the Av Bestin, but later on, He accepted a different role of being a Nasi. That both, in fact, were true. That initially he was the Av Bestin, and after the death of Yehoshua, Shimon accepted himself as the position of being a Nasi. Now, what was so special about Shimon ben Shattach, as opposed to other scholars? This was in the generation, the time of a terrible king known as, in the Talmud, Yanai HaMelech. Now, King Yanai believed in Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, which is a great thing. The problem is he denied Torah Shebaal Peh. He denied the oral traditions. This is what's called the Sadukim, the Sadducees, that they only believe in the written Torah, the literal translation. As we mentioned, for example, the Tefillin, it says, The tefillin should be between your eyes. And they would literally put the tefillin between their eyes. I'm not sure how they were able to see their sitter, but that's what they did. Of course, based on Torah Shebaal Peh, Talmud tells us and teaches us it means a place where there's hair. And therefore it's above the hairline, between the eyes. But this is the perspective of the Tzadukim, which of course goes very much against the very grain of our tradition, which has the balance of the Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav. Now, Yana Hamelech, being a king, as his last name, Hamelech, shows, he was not a person who was very willing to listen to other people. His decision was the right decision, even if it wasn't. And therefore, when it came to all the different chachamim, all the tzaddikim, the Talmid chachamim that lived in that generation, he gave them the ultimatum to join his philosophy or else that they should be killed. So, unfortunately, he killed many of them. Some had the opportunity to flee to Egypt, to Alexandria. However, Shimon ben Shetach didn't need to do that. And the question is, why? And the answer is because of Yana Hamelech's wife. His queen's name was Queen Alexandra, who it's brought down that Shimon ben Shetach was a sibling or the brother of Queen Alexandra, which therefore Yana Hamelech obviously showed a little bit of pity, some rachmanis for him. So it's brought down that during this time, he didn't have a tremendous amount of power. However, after Yana Hamelech died, he was given greater levels of authority, and his role was to reteach and re-educate the people of the proper way of Torah and mitzvos. Shimon Shetach was instrumental also in some other aspects. First of all, when it comes to the ksuba, he was very much involved in that process. And also, he did something else, which when I was a child, when I was in elementary school, I used to always think how much, oh, I can't stand school, which of course now I don't think that way, but as a kid, and I say, I want to find out who's that guy that started schools. I want to find that guy and, you know, beat him up or something. And it's brought down in the Gemara that that person was Shimon ben Shetach. So the Pasuk tells us, the Torah states that the mitzvah of Limud Torah is upon the parent, on the father. Bishinantam uvanecha is a mitzvah of teaching, instructing your child. Bishinantam uvanecha b'dibartavam. Now what happens in a situation where you have an uneducated parent, or, God forbid, Rachman al-San, the child is an orphan, he's a yosom. So then the child will have no Torah education. So therefore, Shimon Shetach was involved in creating schools specifically for orphan children. So you can understand this is a big tzaddik. Now, what is the significance of Shimon Shetach in this Mishnah? Shimon Shetach, when he was able to regain certain levels of power, certain levels of authority, he noticed people who were involved in kishuf, in various forms of black magic, in witchcraft, and because of this, he had many of them punished in the city of Ashkelon. Now, if you were a relative of one of these people, you'd probably be a little bit angry. You probably would be vengeful. You'd want to do something to pay back, if you will, Shimon Shetach. And that's exactly what they did. They accused, of course, falsely, lying, saying that Shimon Shetach's son was also violated this type of witchcraft, did certain things which certainly the Torah would specifically states there's a chiyuv misa. And they said, listen, Rabbi, if you have to follow the laws for your own kid too, just like you followed it for us, that's only fair. And sure enough, he was brought to court, the son of Shimon ben Shetach, and he was accused and convicted, and he was going to be sentenced to death. And of course we know that when it comes to a person who is about to be punished, when the Torah tells us all the various forms of punishment, they're for kapara, it's an atonement. Of course the person doesn't want to be sentenced to death by Beis Din. However, again, it's some form of forgiveness for the aver that they did, so they'll have a clean slate in Olam Haba. And Shimon ben Shetach was walking his son. He heard his son say an incredible statement, and he said, "If I am guilty of this crime, then let my death not absolve me from the sin." The witnesses heard this, and they couldn't believe it. they realized how great of a tzaddik Shimon Shetach's son was, and they realized that they lied. They knew they lied, but they couldn't bear to sentence this young child, this innocent man, to death. And therefore they said, "I'm sorry, we lied in court, we shouldn't have, the boy shouldn't be killed." However, because there's a concept in Jewish law that when you have a witness that says testimony, you can't come back later, the same person, and remove that testimony, in which makes yourself look like a Rasha. You're saying that you lied in court, and therefore their words weren't believed. Now Shimon Shetach, with this tremendous level of power and authority, could have somehow found a loophole, even if there wasn't one, just to save his son's life. But he realized the importance of preserving the authority of the court, and therefore he had no choice but to continue to allow his son to be sentenced to an untimely death. With that story, we can now understand our Mishnah. Shimon ben Shetach lived the rest of his life, obviously in tremendous pain and anguish. He saw his son being put to death when his son didn't deserve it. Very painful. And therefore, this is what Shimon ben Shetach is warning all future generations, all future judges, all future individuals who are involved in any process, any level of the court system. Have marbe lachoras edim. Please interrogate these witnesses thoroughly. After all, if you would have done that in the case of my son, you would have found that they were liars, and my son would be alive today. The heavy zahar b'devarach, be careful with your words, judge. Shemi mitocham yidla shaker. Be very careful. We don't want people to lie in court and then have to suffer the pain as I did the rest of my life. That's Shimon ben Shetach. That's the reason of this Mishnah, of why it was part of his life, and why he felt so connected to the judicial system, and how important it was for him to teach the entire world to never redo the same mistake that occurred in his lifetime. Brought down by Rav Yosef of Babad, who was the author of the Minchas Chinuch, that he was involved in a court case, a judge based in, and before the court case commenced, before it started, one of the litigants walked up to the rabbi and he said, "You know, let's do some Jewish geography over here. You know, I know your father. In fact, your father officiated at my wedding. He officiated at my wedding." So the story continues, and he said, "Once I heard that, I was unable to continue in the court case." So why not? What does that have anything to do with it? Because it's very easy. The fact that I see that even though I don't know you, my father had a relationship with you. He married you off. There's a possibility, even though it's a slight possibility, that perhaps I might end up making a mistake in court. I might end up saying something or reaching a verdict which is not the MS, which is not the truth. How careful a person needs to be to make sure that occurs. We find in Sefer Shmuel that Shmuel's children, Pasuk tells us, did not follow in the same path as their father. Shmuel traveled from place to place. He roughed it as a judge. However, his children stayed in one place. They stayed in Be'er Sheva. The Pasuk says an incredible statement. It says that these children had a desire for money, chemdas mamon, and that they took shoychad, they took bribes. On this, the Gemara tells us that a person should never think, certainly not say, that Shmuel's children sinned. They didn't do a sin. What do you mean? The pasuk says they took a bribe. So it said that what happened, according to one of the Mefarshim, is that Shmuel's children were Levim, and they were entitled to Truma. They were entitled to taking Meiser Sheni, rather. And these tithes can be given to any Levi. It doesn't make a difference. It can be given to the Levi across the street, to my neighbor, or to a judge. So Shmuel's children would stick out their hands and they would get a nice fat paycheck before the court case began. Now everyone that saw this would say, this is shoychad. It's a bribe. Aye, but it's not a bribe. Because after all, it was coming to them. After, that's what the Torah prescribes. The Torah says they're entitled to receive these items. This miser, these tithes. However, perception creates reality. And it's very possible that the children of Shmuel, by receiving these gifts, although any Levi was entitled to it, that might have hindered their ability to judge properly. And therefore, because of this, they're considered to be those who took shoychad, taking bribes. If you go to a judicial system, to the courts, very often you'll see the universal sign, which is a statue of a person with scales indicating that a person has to weigh out the decisions, who's right, who's wrong, and also a blindfold over their eyes. Now, I used to think as a kid that that meant that judges don't know what they're doing. They're blind to the truth. But of course, the concept that justice is blind, it means that they're supposed to be unaffected by anything except for the facts of the case. In fact, some Bati Dinim, they used to wear a talus, and they would drape the talus over their head. Why? They're not davening. Why do they need to wear a talus? So it's that they shouldn't even look at the litigants, to look at their clothes, the external factors. This person's wealthy, this one's poor. By covering themselves with a talus, they won't be affected by their decisions. It's brought down in the Medrash Shmuel, in this Mishnah, that what it means over here to be marbe lachkor se'edim, to integrate a lot, it means that a person should ask questions as a judge in a rapid-fire pace, question after question after question, without stopping, never leaving the witnesses the opportunity to be able to give a tailor-made answer. By repeating questions using different wording, it's very possible that's a way you can catch them on a lie. For myself, I'm in the middle of writing my dissertation on curriculum integration, and part of the process is interviewing different administrators. And it's interesting how the principal tries to paint a certain picture of their school. However, as I continue asking more and more questions, you begin to realize sometimes they themselves are not telling the truth. Not even because they think they're lying, but that sometimes you want to believe, and therefore you say what you want to happen, even though it's not the truth. So the Medrash Shmuel tells us again to keep asking question after question after question, and then you'll be able to find out the MS, what's the real truth. It's brought down in the Hachasid Yavetz that when a person is issuing a verdict as a judge, you should not elaborate more than necessary on the reasons for the ruling. Because it's very possible that people will study the case in order to learn how to perhaps deceive a court in a future case. Which is very interesting that that's how the Hachos Yavetz explains the Mishnah of Have you Zahir Bit of Recha, to be careful with your words, because it's very much against the whole judicial system in American culture. We mentioned previous Mishnayot that the Mishnah teaches us guilty until proven innocent. However, over here we have another concept. Because in American law, there's a concept called a precedent. Setting a precedent in a case. That a good lawyer will find a situation, a case which happened a few years back, a few months ago, and draw comparisons to the current case that they're in. And say, well, if this person won and received $10 million over there, then my client should also be have a comparable payout of $10 million. That's a precedent. HaChassid Yavit says that that's a big problem. Because if a person looks and studies the right answers, the right things to say, in which you will get that $10 million, what were the right things to say? They could have been a pack of lies. And if they're a bunch of lies, then, in fact, what do we have? Do we really have a true Bestin? Do we have a true judicial system? Unfortunately, I don't have to say much more about that as far as the American culture, the litigious society that we live in, and all the different cases that we constantly find day after day, that certainly people will say things, even though it's not the MS, just that they should be able to win millions of dollars. It's brought down in the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura says, what does it mean, Havi Zahir B'Devracha, judge, be careful with your words? Shol Yoimer Hadayin Shema Kach V'Kach Ha'Emaisa, that the judge shouldn't say, gee, is this what happened? Oh. Im Hoya Davar Kach Hoya Ploni Zaka, you should know, if you say or do such and such, you will be victorious. You'll win millions of dollars. If, is this really what happened? Are you sure this isn't what happened? When we talk to Varm Halalu, the Bar Tanura tells us, when you ask in that type of framing the questions, Loimid Bal Hadin, O Aedim, Loimid Darvishul Hayu, you're going to teach people to say things that aren't true. Now, but it's very possible, again, that people, the mind is an incredibly powerful tool. And a person could really believe in their mind, convince yourself to believe the truth, because I need it to be true. So don't feed into that. And don't say, oh, by the way, maybe this is what happened and you'll win. Because of course they're going to say, oh yeah, you're right. The Ruach Chaim, giving a different spin on this Mishnah, tells the judge the opposite of some of the other interpretations, like the Medrash Shmuel. It says a dayan has to be very careful not to mislead the Aden. Don't mislead the witnesses in attempt to find them to be false Aden. Don't try to make them lie. Now, even though we have found in other situations, for example, in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, that we interrogate the witnesses by the seeing of the new moon, they say which direction is the crescent of the moon facing? Is it facing toward the sun? Is it facing away from the sun? In which, of course, the only possible way is based on the sun reflecting and shining on the moon, will have a direct answer as to which direction the crescents are facing. So sometimes, of course, a judge is allowed to interrogate and try to push a witness in a certain direction. However, if you do it too often, too much, inevitably everyone will have a breakdown and eventually someone will end up lying. So try not to cause a person to lie. Now, it's very possible, even though I saw all the facts, I might not have remembered every single last detail all the way down to the very bottom of where the guy, what the guy's shoes were, what color they were. Do you keep asking me question after question after question? It's very possible I might end up lying. So therefore, the Ruach Chaim says, please be careful. But we did start off with a very important question. What is the point of this Mishnah? I'm not a judge. I don't like suing people. Just because my coffee says, caution, this beverage is hot, if it spills on me, you know what? I'll get a napkin. I'm not going to sue the store that gave me the coffee. So why do I need to know this Mishnah? The Sfas Emes tells us a very fascinating answer. He says that when the Mishnah tells us, interrogate the witnesses, who are these witnesses? These Edim are not two different people outside of yourself, but rather it's referring to your Yetzer Tov and your Yetzer Hara. In every person, we have the desire to do the right thing, or sometimes do things which are counterproductive to our self, to our health, to our spiritual well-being. However, our minds are extremely powerful. And very often we can mislead ourselves to believe that we're really doing nothing wrong, and that our Yetzer Hara is speaking to us. That's not my Yetzer Hara. That's my Yetzer Tov. I don't have a Yetzer Hara. It's L'shem Shemayim. I'm doing it for the right reasons. Person has to be lachgor es edim. Really understand what is your Yetzer Hara and why are you doing what you're doing. And don't rationalize your behaviors. Because if you rationalize your behavior, Shema mitoicham yilmedu l'shaker, you'll be lying. You're not going to be lying in court. You're going to be lying to yourself. So the Gemara in Kiddushin says that if a person does an Avera and does it again, it's considered mutter. And the Gemara asks, what do you mean? It's permissible? You eat a cheeseburger one day, it's an Avera. The second day, it's okay? No, of course not. It was Avera yesterday, it's an Avera today. The Gemara says, Nasalo keheter. What does it mean, Nasalo keheter? It's the first time you do something wrong, you look over your shoulder. You might even have a little bit of that Jewish guilt, which I don't believe in. But nonetheless, that's the feeling a person may have the first time. Afterwards, you tried it. No bolt of lightning came down and struck you dead. You're still alive. Everyone still respects you. Everyone still loves you. So you try it again. Until eventually, Nasalo keheter. You don't even realize that you're doing anything wrong. You think it's permissible. You don't even bother thinking about it anymore. It becomes second nature. And therefore, the Sfas Emes says, be very careful. When you listen to the Edim, when you listen to your Yetzer Hara, ask questions. Ask yourself, what are you doing this for? Is it really in my best interest? And if it's not, don't do it. Because otherwise, you'll be lying to yourself. Which, of course, is the worst person you could ever lie to, is lying to yourself. The Gemara tells us that there are some people that were L'shem Shemayim. Satan, translated as Satan, and Penina. Who's Penina? Penina, as we quoted already in Sefer Shmuel, Penina had a husband by the name of Elkanah. However, Elkanah was also married to Chana, who of course ends up being the mother of Shmuel. Penina had many children, Chana had none. And so we read about this on Rosh Hashanah and the Haftorah. Penina used to painfully antagonize Chana. It's brought down that some of the things she would say, she would go up to Chana and say, gee, you have to get ready, you have to cook dinner for all your kids. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. You don't have any kids. My bad. Oh, Chana, I think it's time for you to pick up your kids from school. Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting, you don't have any kids. So painful. And this is Penina. Obviously it's Tzadikus, married to Elkanah, one of the great leaders in that generation. How could she speak so poorly to Chana? So the Gemara says, she did it L'shem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven. What do you mean? What was L'shem Shemayim? It's because Penina saw in Chana that she wasn't having children, she was barren. And Chana thought in her mind, you know what, I'm barren, I'll always be barren, I'll never have another kid, I'll never have children. Penina said, you have to be Mispawel. I want you to daven for a child. And therefore, I'm going to bother you and make you feel rotten to the core until you find no other choice but to turn to Hashem and beg for a child, and then you'll get the child. L'shem Shemai. It's brought down. How do we know that for sure it was L'shem Shemai? We don't find anywhere in the story that that was Penina's intentions, that she should daven, which of course she ended up doing, special tefillah schana, but we don't find that that was Penina's intentions. How do we know, in fact, she was L'shem Shemayim? Some explain, some Hasidic masters, that the idea it was L'shem Shemayim is because if it wasn't L'shem Shemayim, if it wasn't for the sake of heaven, no way could anyone be so cruel to another person. The most painful and most dangerous people in this world are the people that think they have God telling them that they're doing something right. All we have to do is look at the Middle East. You hear about terrorists. It's one thing to, if I would, for example, tell you, I want you to step on a bunch of ants. Step on some ants. So you'd be like, Rabbi, you're a little bit nuts. What's the point of that? And you won't do it. Now, if I would tell you, go take a plane, hijack it, and smash it into a building killing innocent civilians, you would also think I'm crazy. However, if I can somehow convince you and say, you know, you're doing God's work, this is L'shem Shemayim, you're doing this for a greater cause than yourself, in your mind, you can say, you know what? It doesn't seem rational. It seems extremely cruel. Killing innocent people. People that are just going to work. That don't care about violence. Don't even know who I am. However, this great scholar, this great individual is telling me that I'm going to get a terrific world to come. With all the different things that they receive over there. So they do it. Penina was L'shem Shemayim. Penina really was L'shem Shemayim. In her mind, she felt that she was doing the right thing. And how dangerous that is. And who else is L'shem Shemayim saying? The Yetzer Hara. Because as the Sfas Emes tells us, our Yetzer Hara can convince us. It's a very powerful mind. Our mind can trick us to believe anything we want, so that we can feel good about ourselves. Look ourselves in the mirror and say, I'm alright. Sfas Emes is telling us, don't take things for face value. Look at the truth. Look at what's your Yetzer Tov, what's your Yetzer Hara. Because if you don't, Yilmadu L'shaker, you're going to end up lying to yourself. It's brought down in the Rabbeinu Yonah, on this Mishnah. Rabbeinu Yonah tells us, what does it mean, having marbe lachoras edim, to interrogate the witnesses thoroughly, lasos them derisha v'chakira harbe. You should harbe pamim. Many times you should keep asking them many questions over and over. Uvazet tigal hasot. By doing this, the truth will come out. The truth will be found. Kibarov devarim lo yechdal pasha. You know, it's like a child, you know, Pinocchio. You say one lie, your nose gets bigger and bigger. Eventually, you can't control. You can't remember, I said this to him, and I lied this way to him. And you can't remember. You have to have a whole system of lies to make sure that you're covering yourself. Eventually, a person will get caught on their lie. Time will eventually catch up to them, and they'll end up being caught in a lie. And therefore, he says, if you keep asking questions, the reality is no person is such a great liar that they can eventually, they'll just continue and never get caught. V'tilman mitoch nivrehim imoshakar idu, through their words you'll find out the truth. The Rabbeinu Yonah continues, be careful of their words, perhaps otherwise they'll learn to lie. So the Rabbeinu Yonah tells us, ki kish tachkor osam al inyan, because when you ask them and interrogate them on a specific matter, tuchel adabir debrecho b'derech shem yavinu meizah sad yischayev o havam b'dino v'yimlum debrecho b'mayichol moshakir k'yelu aschoto. Similar to what we said before in the Bar Tanura, that what potentially could happen is that by you asking questions in a specific manner, it's very easy that they can understand and deduce what to say and what not to say, so be very careful. Concluding the words of this Mishnah, we did explain one possible way that this Mishnah test is not specifically talking about a Dayan using the words of the Sfas Emes. It's very possible we can answer what is this Mishnah referring to. Don't have a sefer to quote. However, I can tell you that there's an issue that occurs often in our homes. Person has a tough day at work, you come home, maybe have a little dinner, you put your feet up, and you just want to be left alone. And of course, that's when the phone rings. And that phone, when it rings, it's got to be for you. Your little child picks up the phone, and the child turns to you and says, Daddy, Mom, it's Aunt Bertha. And your eyes roll in the back of your head like, oh no, not her again. If I speak to her, she's going to keep me on the phone for an hour just like last time. Hey, tell her I'm not here. Tell him I'm not home yet. And the little child innocently says, I'm sorry, my daddy's not home right now. Can I take a message? And the child hangs up and goes back to whatever the kids do nowadays. Now, you're comfortable in your chair, but what just happened? You would never want your child to lie to you. However, children look, children hear. They hear everything and they see everything. There's a book by the name of Sizer and Sizer called This Children Are Watching, which, as we can understand by the title, it means that teachers, and of course parents as well, have to be extremely cautious in everything they say and do, because they are role models, and children, even if you don't believe it, are watching you, and they'll emulate your actions. So on this, perhaps we can conclude by looking at this Mishnah one last time. The Mishnah says, "Behave zahir b'dvarecha." Be very careful with your words. Why? Shem mitocham yilmdu l'shakar, because otherwise you may be teaching people to lie. This isn't talking about a dayan. It's not talking about the judge. It's talking about you. You as a parent. What do you say in the presence of your child's little ears? What do you do in the presence of their eyes? Do you want them to be truthful? Then you have to be truthful. When that child says that Aunt Bertha's on the phone, don't tell them that you're not here. Perhaps you can say you're unavailable. Or could you have her, can I give you my number? She'll call you back. Take a message. Don't say you're not here. Be careful with what comes into the child's eyes. You know, after a hard day's work, you might go to Blockbuster and rent a movie, a rated R movie or whatever. And you and your wife are sitting there watching television, and your little child comes in and say, oh, you can't watch this. This is not for you. What type of message are you sending? Are you sending a message which is the same, which is clear, with no contradictions? That's MS. Sheker is a bunch of lies. A lie is doing one thing and telling your child to do something else. Be very careful with your words. Shema mitocham yilmadu l'shaker. Good Shabbos.